This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Let's have some fun. On a Tuesday, and oh, what a Tuesday it has been. Trump did a big press conference today. I'm not going to play a lot of that, but there are a couple things from Pete Hegseth there. A couple updates on that communist op we will discuss. All kinds of immigration talk. We're going to discuss institutional trust, institutions themselves a lot tonight on the show. After that, we're going to tackle everything from smartphones, Venezuela, left-wing, dark money. I mean, my goodness, there's so much to get to tonight. It's going to be a wonderful night on the Jesse Kelly Show. Now, before we get into anything else, we talked last night, you remember, about communist ops and how they create them, why they create them. And it was about the Pete Hegseth killing the narco-terrorists on the drug boats. He ordered a second strike. And more than anything else, we talked about how important it was that you and I do not take part in them. We don't take part in them. And it's not because we love or hate the target of the communist op. We do not take part in them because we understand the communist only has our worst interests at heart. He means us harm. He wants to hurt you and hurt me and hurt our country. Therefore, whatever he's doing is bad, and I should not participate in it. You don't ever want to be Lisa Murkowski of Alaska.
Shocked us all. And I think most would say that when you have two individuals that are literally floating in the water, a second order to kill them all is not something that we would consider within the rules of war.
You don't do what Lisa Murkowski did. And today, I almost can't believe I'm saying this, but the New York Times printed an article that pretty much put the whole thing to bed. I'm not going to read it all for you. Long story short, when your liberal Aunt Peggy strolls into the Christmas party a week from now, and she starts talking about how Pete Hegseth ordered SEAL Team 6 to shoot drug dealers in the head as they were floating in the water, just know that all that's already been shot down. A second strike is the most normal thing in the world, meaning you nuke the boat. If the boat is still intact or still moving, you nuke it again. You send another drone. You send another, whatever you use to get it, you do it again and again and again until it's gone. There was no executing prisoners as they're bobbing in the ocean. You didn't take part in the communist op, and for that, I want you to reach your arm over your shoulder and give yourself a nice pat on the back. If you want, you could even text a friend.
People be texting.
Let them know you're not a moron. You're not part of the low-T GOP. You recognize the communist op for what it was. You refused to participate. And 24 hours later, the lie's been defeated. Pete Hegseth was asked about it today during this big press conference.
Only just begun striking narco boats and putting narco terrorists at the bottom of the ocean.
That is how you answer those questions as well. Now, I understand, based on my emails, you have many, many questions and concerns about things like war and Venezuela, and actually in kind of an odd duck move with everything else we have to get to. I want to answer some of those just so we can clear this up and move on and talk about institutions and institutional trust. For instance, this lady said, I'm confused about what constitutes a war crime. And she goes on, says a bunch of other things. And she says, how is it when the Trump military tries to do something, make sure the enemy is killed, it's called a war crime instead of heroism? So let's discuss the idea of war crimes. I think maybe we should nail this down to its most basic form. First of all, do you believe there should be rules in war? I see, it's a hard question to answer right away, right? Instinctively, you want to say yes. Well, of course there should be rules of war. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do that. You don't want to use this kind of weapon. You don't want to torture people. You don't want to hurt children. This is a question right off the bat everybody has to ask themselves, because the answer you instinctively give isn't necessarily the answer you want to give. Should there be rules in war? Well, I'll go ahead and answer it. For me personally, I believe there should be rules in war, but I should never expect the enemy to follow said rules. Now, I didn't say what my rules were or what they weren't. Why? Why didn't I specify? Well, I've brought this up before. Anyone who's listened to the show for a while knows I love history, but my number one historical obsession, it has been for years and a decade, is the Pacific portion of World War II, the fighting with the Japanese and the islands and everything else. I'm just fascinated by the whole thing. And I've told you before, I mean, you can go watch documentaries on it if you find a good one. Marines were routinely killed and maimed by Japanese troops who faked being wounded, who faked being dead, who faked surrendering just so they could kill more Marines and Army soldiers. There were plenty of Army guys there. E.B. Sledge, he wrote that wonderful book With the Old Breed, talked about how the Japanese would tuck a grenade under their armpits and raise their hands up, only they'd have the top of their arms close to their body. And when the Marine approached, you reach out your arms, drop the grenades, you kill everybody. So, if I were to ask you, remember, we have to have this talk. If I were to ask you, hey, should you execute someone who's surrendering? You would probably say, like all decent people would, no. But how many of your friends do you have to see die like that before you decide, oh, there's no more surrendering? No. Everybody gets popped in the head. Everybody. The Marines and the Army soldiers routinely ran into this nightmare because American troops were, at their hearts, good people. They did not want to harm women or children. The Japanese soldiers knew this. And so when the Japanese soldiers would hide in caves, if civilians were available, they would take women, their still nursing babies, and children into the caves with them. If you're a Marine, you can't go into the cave and rescue them. It's not possible. You'll die or your buddies will die. You also can't leave that cave with armed Japanese troops in it, because then they'll come out at night and cut your buddy's throat when he's asleep. You have to neutralize it. And so the Marines would grab satchel charges, throw them in the caves, and blow it up. Sometimes everyone in there died instantly. Sometimes the entrance of the cave would simply collapse and everyone in there would slowly starve to death and die of thirst in the pitch black. The men, the women, the children. Now, let me ask you again. What are your rules for war? Don't those, quote, rules, don't they become always situationally dependent? You know, the more powerful fighting force is always fond of rules of war.
you can't do this and you can't do that. Sign this agreement. Say you won't do that. You won't harm this. You won't attack this way. You know why it's the less powerful fighting force that oftentimes violates what you and I would consider rules of war? Necessity. They have to. So let's discuss, and the chances this is going to offend you are probably pretty strong. Let's discuss the rules of drug runners, terrorists, what should be done. How have we been doing it? Maybe you didn't watch it on CNN. I'll tell you about it next.
Fighting for your freedom every day.
USA! USA!
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Tuesday. Remember, you can email the show your love, your hate, your death threats, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We're going to get to institutional trust after we finish up on this little talk here on Venezuela. So the question was about war crimes. What are war crimes? And I just discussed with you rules of war. Do you believe in them? What do you believe about them? So let me explain. Let me explain how it's always worked and how it will always work. For instance, let's say it's Iraq. Let's say you get intelligence that there is a convoy of terrorists and they're heading towards Baghdad. They cross the border from Syria. It's a convoy of terrorists. There are bad guys in there. Now, first of all, don't ever, ever, ever think to yourself that it works like it does in the movies, where one guy reports to you, hey, I think there are some terrorists in there. And then you and a bunch of helicopters and bombs and bullets, you roll out and just go kill everybody. That's not how it works at all in the United States of America. There is a long chain of command for these kinds of strikes. It has to be signed off on by this commander and that commander. It's not a one-off thing. One guy doesn't get to push the button, is what I'm saying, because he feels like it. And by the way, that includes the Secretary of War. One guy doesn't get to push the button. Several guys have to look at the intelligence, look at what's there and say, okay, boom, stamped approved. Boom, stamped approved. It goes through a long, long list, a checklist. Now, let's go to the nitty-gritty, the ugly part of it that you may not like because it doesn't remind you of Captain America. Once all the check marks have been gotten, once the stamp of approval was on the paperwork, everyone in that convoy is going to die. And they're not all necessarily going to be holding weapons at the time. They're not all going to shoot first. In fact, I know this violates our comic book sensibilities, but I actually don't want him to be armed first, and I don't want him to shoot first because then there's a chance he'll kill me. Once I've determined that he's an enemy combatant, I want to sneak up behind him and put one in the back of his head. Therefore, he's dead and I'm alive, and so are my friends. So how does it work? Well, you send in whatever you happen to send in. It happens a variety of different ways. I mean, it can be everything from tomahawks to just all kinds of different ways you can choose to nuke that convoy. But not only do you nuke the convoy once, then you're flying over it at the time and you're looking for signs of life that includes somebody crawling on the ground with its legs blown off. And if you detect signs of life, if you detect intact vehicles, most definitely, because there's munitions in those vehicles, you have to assume. Then you send in another strike and another strike and another strike until everyone is freaking dead. Because that's war. War is ugly. It is unfair. It is terrible. And people die. And contrary to what Hollywood would have you believe, you don't wait until he shoots first, punches first, grabs a weapon, and gives you no other choice but to take a life. You hit first and you hit hard and you make sure he's dead. Over and over and over again. That's how war has always been done and will always be done. Now, I talked yesterday about the communists and how they don't care about war crimes, right? None of this is about war crimes. Is it a violation of the laws of war? None of this is about that. This was simply an op, a communist op, designed to divide the Trump administration. If they're lucky, take out Pete Hegseth. You understand what it was. We already talked about that. As far as the international laws of war, I'll be honest with you, I laugh at them. And you know the reason I laugh at them? It's not because I don't want there to be rules. I very much do want there to be rules. I don't want civilians hurt. I don't want people tortured. I don't want people gassed and things like that. The reason I've always laughed about the laws of war is the entire history of the world is the second someone's losing, they violate the rules and the law because they don't care about it at all. You know, there were laws, rules against using poison gas in World War I. The second Germany decided it couldn't break the stalemate they had going, out came the poison gas. There were all kinds of rules and laws in this war and that war. And, well, the second you start losing, the second it starts going against you, you throw those things out and you do all the things that are against the rules. I laugh when I hear college boys and Washington, D.C. do-gooders who've never seen combat talk about the rules of war and war crimes and things like that, because all it tells me is you've never actually been there. And of course, they'll roll out some air fingers, quote, veteran, and he's almost always some jag fobbit who never left a line. He never heard a shot fired in anger. He never saw an ounce of blood unless it was the sliver he got at the chow hall going back for his fifth helping of chocolate cake while the rest of us were out on patrol. It's the only blood he ever saw in the global war on terror. And now he's, of course, a Democrat, and he's talking about Pete Hegseth and the rules of war, and I'm not really comfortable. Hey, beep, 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 beep. And these are the subversives that have me greatly concerned about potential war with Venezuela. I'm going to give you one more thought on this and why I'm concerned, and then we're moving on. We're going to talk about institutional trust. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Tuesday, talking about rules of war. Now, finally, my final thought on this, because I want to talk about institutional trust. There's a story out from the FDA that maybe went by you, maybe you don't care. I very, very much do care, and we're about to talk about it. But before I get to that, Venezuela. I don't know what's coming, neither do you. There's all kinds of saber rattling, if you will. I don't know what's coming. But I will say this, and I'm sure the Trump administration is well aware of what I'm going to say, so I don't want to act like I'm educating them about something. We no longer have a Democrat Party in the United States of America. We have an anti-American Communist Party in the country. You see it every single day. But what's the difference? Well, Democrats may push for leftist things, there's no question about it. But once you go full communist, then what you are is a subversive trying to hurt the country. You could argue a 1985 Democrat was doing things that hurt the country. Hey, I didn't like that policy. I didn't like this policy. You could argue that all day long. But as a whole, the party itself wasn't designed to hurt the country. Hurting the country may have been a byproduct of bad policy. It wasn't designed for that. With the modern-day Democrat Party being a subversive communist party, we have to consider something that maybe you haven't considered. Think about this. Let's say, just for the sake of argument, let's say we go full-on boots-on-the-ground regime change in Venezuela. I'm going to set aside the politics of trying to sell that to the American people and stuff like that. We've already discussed that. I'm not getting into it tonight. Let's just say it's happening. Trump says the Marines are going in, the airstrikes begin, the works, right? All right. How many people in the Central Intelligence Agency can be trusted? How many people inside the national security apparatus of the United States of America are there to bring down the United States of America? How many people in the Democrat Party would work hand in hand with the media, the Central Intelligence Agency, every other part of the system to actually try to get us to lose that war so the Trump administration would look bad. How many? How do you prosecute a war like that? It's not that wars have to have universal support from everyone back at home in order to be successful. That's not the case. In fact, that's rarely the case. I'm not saying that. You can have people who are against the war, for the war, all that's fine. But what if you have one of the two major political parties and they'll burn this whole place to ash in order to hurt Donald Trump's approval numbers? How do you fight a war like that? What? How does that look on the ground? Okay. Well, let's just game this out, shall we? And then we'll move on and talk about institutional trust because this is actually going to tie directly to it. The Trump administration, right now, they're doing things like nuking drug boats and closing the airspace over Venezuela. Well, these are policies that generally Americans are okay with. One, we don't have any strong like of narco terrorists. So when you watch an internet video of some getting blown up, you don't care. But that's only part of why you're okay with it. You're okay with it because no Americans are being harmed. In fact, there's not even a real risk of any American being harmed. The Biden administration took a brutal, brutal hit to their public approval numbers when 13 warriors died at Abbey Gate and everyone kind of knew it was their fault. The American people will tolerate a certain amount of foreign adventuring right up to the point where they're burying troops. Then they start to get upset. This is not new. The FDR administration was gravely concerned about the casualty numbers at Iwo Jima before we got into the Japanese invasion because they knew the American people were sick of it. They were really worried about it, and justifiably so. The American people do not want blood. Now, let's say you're, just hypothetically, a United States senator from Michigan. Let's say you have deep ties to the Central Intelligence Agency. Let's say there are a bunch of people in the CIA, just for the sake of argument, who are actually committed communists who would love to burn America down. Let's say you're this senator. Kind of agree. In the very least, you don't care if America burns. Now, let's say you have knowledge of the location of a ship off the coast of Venezuela the Venezuelans don't know about. A ship that if the Venezuelans knew about it, they actually had the ability to take it out. How hard do you have to work to slip that information to the Venezuelans so a destroyer gets nuked in the water and you wake up tomorrow morning and find out 400 American sailors are at the bottom of the ocean? What happens to Donald Trump's approval numbers if 400 American sailors end up at the bottom of the ocean? And you know for a fact, I don't even have to try to convince you, you know for a fact every elected Democrat in Congress would happily hand over that information in order to hurt Trump. You know, these people have proven there's nothing they won't do in order to get Trump. Shoot, they tried to freaking kill him, framed him for crimes. You think they won't kill some sailors they don't care about? It means nothing to these people. I am worried about our ability to prosecute any war with anybody with a subversive party like this inside the United States of America. And I'm not talking about being against the war, if there was a war. That's not what I'm discussing at all. All kinds of people, and probably you, are going to be against actual military action like that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not talking about run-of-the-mill against the war. I'm talking, I want to burn this country down. Trump is hurting the revolution. And if I can kill a bunch of American troops, then I'll do it in order to further the revolution. And that's the kind of Democrat Party we have now. How quickly do you think Jasmine Crockett would hand out critical pieces of intelligence to the enemy if she thought it would help the revolution? She wouldn't even hesitate. Wouldn't even hesitate at all. Think about that. All right. Now, that brings me to something that's completely unrelated, but I'm going to go off on it because it matters. It matters a lot. We're going to talk about institutions and institutional trust. Because I got this email about Venezuela, although we're done with Venezuela. Jesse, I was listening to the opening of yesterday's show about commie ops, and the key part is using corrupt institutions to give the op credibility. Quote, seven sources, the CIA, Harvard, etc. It's tough for people who still trust the media in these institutions not to fall victim. Even when I listen, I can feel a twinge of angst thinking, oh, that does sound bad. So we're going to, now this is going to take a while to walk our way through this, but we're going to discuss another danger of where we are as a country right now, and that is we don't have institutions that are trustworthy. We have pulled our trust away. They have proven to be untrustworthy. How do you march forward as a country when the people themselves feel as if the contract with their institutions has been broken? Let's discuss that. Before we discuss that, I want you to break a contract with Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. You are not only paying a disgusting communist company that hates your country, you're paying way too much. You know how PureTech has all these different plans based on your budget and what you want to spend every month. You know that, right? And you've probably already looked at their unlimited plan. Unlimited plan? That's unlimited talk, unlimited text, unlimited data, and then a 30 gig hotspot. Well, that's their most expensive plan. Yeah, except for right now. And I think we have 5 days left on this deal. It ends December 7th. $29.95 a month for PureTalk's unlimited plan for life. Do you know how stupid smart you're going to feel 5-10 years from now when you're still paying $29.95 for your cell phone service? Your friends are going to hate you because of jealousy. Dial #250 and switch before it's over. #250, say Jesse Kelly. That's what you do. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Miss something?
There's a podcast.
Get it on demand wherever podcasts are found. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Tuesday. Remember, you can email us your love, your hate, your death threats, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So we're going to get to all kinds of things, but you're going to have to buckle up for a few because this might take me a little bit. We're going to have a discussion we've talked about again and again, and we'll keep talking about it because it is so important. It's everything. Institutions and institutional trust. All nations are built on top of their institutions. The institutions hold up the country. Now, let me break this down in a way that I haven't before. Medical institutions, because that's what we're about to discuss that in a moment. But medical institutions, even if you're a small village, it is so important that you have someone there who can provide some kind of medical care when people get sick or hurt. Now, today, you're thinking about doctors and nurses and medical school and things like that, and we'll get to that in a moment. But even in a small village, there has to be a medicine man or something like that. But not just the medicine man, you see. He has to have people training underneath him. The recipes and things they use, they come down from generation to generation to generation. The medical man, the medical institution of that village must be there because the people in the village, the people in that tribe, they have to know, hey, this itches. Hey, I broke my leg. My tummy's upset. My wife is pregnant. They have to know there is a place they can go to get accurate medical care, accurate, efficient medical care. They have to know. And the institution of it is everything. Education, religion, media, entertainment. These institutions are pillars that hold up societies. There has to be, for media, for example, in the media. Now, this is going to be laughable because of the disgusting media we have in this country. It's critical because you're busy. You have a life. You have a job. You got school. You got this. You got that. You got everything else. You don't have all day long to pay attention to the news and to dig through archives here and archives there and listen to the police scanner. You don't have that. What do you have? You've got 15 minutes, 30 minutes, time when you're working out, maybe at work, to tune in to somebody to try to get accurate information on what is happening in the world, in your country, in your state, and in your community. There has to be an institution, therefore, in your country that trains people to give out accurate, unbiased information so normal people can be informed. But we don't have it here. And it's devastating. Now, I know that we have options. You and I, we both have options now because of social media and all the different podcasts and shows. And there are all kinds of places you can go now, go that are outside of tradition, but we lost it. And we lost these institutions. I'll get to the medical ones. We lost these institutions not by accident. We lost these institutions for two reasons. The first reason we lost our institutions is it just seems to happen with time. Meaning countries, especially large, powerful countries like ours, over a long enough period of time, for a variety of reasons, the institutions will eventually be taken over by evil, selfish, corrupt people, and they will ruin the reputation of the institution by taking it over and doing evil, horrible, corrupt things. And once that institutional trust is gone, once the people think it's a joke, then honestly, you might as well bury the institution because it no longer serves a purpose at all. I almost laughed when I heard this lady. Her name is, Katie Turr is her name. She's been a communist activist pretending to be a journalist for years and years and years and years and years. She is with MSNBC. This is what she said. Listen to what she said.
People don't trust us. They don't believe us. And it makes me wonder if this job, as I'm currently doing it, is effective, but if it's doing more harm than good.
Katie Turr sought out journalism because Katie Turr wanted to move the communist revolution forward. She didn't seek out journalism because she wanted you to be informed about the news of the day, the weather, the crime, the economy. That never crossed her mind. And you know how you can tell what crossed her mind? She actually dropped the word in there that was so revealing. Did you catch it? I'll play it again. We'll see if you can catch it. It's one word. It tells you all you need to know about how she views her job as a journalist.
People don't trust us. They don't believe us. And it makes me wonder if this job, as I'm currently doing it, is effective, but if it's doing more harm than good.
Effective? What do you mean by effective? If you saw yourself as a journalist whose job it was to inform people of simple facts, the truth, why would you ever be concerned about being effective? You would only use that word if you saw your job as being something other than the truth and the facts. You see, these people are everywhere. Brian Stelter is another great example.
What is this all about? Is this just about controlling the narrative?
To delegitimize the media. I would say it's to delegitimize the media, Jessica. This media bias monitor is being produced at taxpayer expense.
He's worried about the Trump administration delegitimizing the media. But the media delegitimized itself. It was conquered by corrupt, evil, selfish people who saw their job as being something other than informing the public. And now the trust is gone. And they can lament it all day long, but they did it. Which brings me to our medical institutions. We'll get to that in a moment. Before we get to that, speaking of medicine, it's so sad that now abortion is thought of as medicine in this country. It's treated as medicine by so many people in this country. Oh, you got a baby? Well, just go see a doctor. Kill it. You know what? We'll get you a telehealth meeting. Then we'll just mail you a pill. You kill it right there in the safety and comfort of your bathroom. Flush it down the toilet. Isn't that the most disgusting thing you've ever heard in your life? Preborn is out there providing real medicine. It's called an ultrasound. They're giving these women free ultrasounds. And then, if they need more help, they don't kick them out on the street. Up to 2 years of care. You want to genuinely save a life? You know it's Giving Tuesday today? What's more blessed than saving the life of a baby? Go to preborn.com/Jesse and give today. preborn.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.